Hello, and welcome to the vibrant world of the Doulas Uncensored podcast. Doulas Uncensored will be hosted by two awesome doulas, me, Moran from Two Life Doula, and my incredible doula sister and co-host, Sammy from Sammy Griffin Birth Support. Together, we're diving into everything from birth to death and all the wild moments in between. This podcast is not your typical journey. It's a blend of entertainment, education, and spirited conversations that aim to entertain you, enlighten you, and stimulate your critical thinking. We're here to inspire you, challenge your perspective, and share the joy and wisdom that comes from our collective experiences. So whether you're a seasoned birth enthusiast, a curious mind, or someone just embarking on this fascinating journey, join us as we unravel the mysteries of life in the most authentic, unfiltered way. So strap on in to Doulas Uncensored, where no topic is off limits and every conversation is an adventure. Enjoy the ride. Welcome to Doulas Uncensored. Today is our first episode, Sammy. I am so excited. What about you?
I am so excited, Moran.
Well, today you've got two awesome doulas with you. My name's Moran. I've got Sammy here with me as my co-host. And today is just going to be about getting to know one another and kind of letting you guys know who you're going to be listening to. So, Sammy, before we start, how's your week been?
It's been busy. It is really busy doing this work, but also very beautiful. And, you know, yeah. I've just come from an appointment. I've rushed home, jumped on to do this. And I was just thinking, how lucky am I that I'm starting this project with you and just like this little support network for each other. And I think it's so important for doulas to find your people. Not that we're, giving advice straight off the bat, but if I did have one piece of advice for new doulas, it would be find your people. Find the
yes,
ones that you
find
really
your tribe.
Love. And yeah, because we are, I don't know what I'd do without you girls. And so I'm very excited for this little adventure.
I think there's a really good, nice community of doulas in Brisbane, Australia, where we are. And I think it's good to have your people around because when you get off, especially a very long birth or you need to debrief with someone, you've got someone to call, you've got someone who has your back. And that's important, especially in the work that we do, because it can be quite lonely. So,
Absolutely. Yeah,
I think it's
and,
great.
You know, just even, you know, you're in a birth for 20 hours, your brain just stops working the way it usually does. To have that little group chat and go, hey, baby's doing this, or I need a little bit of help with advocacy. Where's my next avenue? And just the girls there going, yeah, it's okay. Have you tried this, and give you those ideas? Because when you're so sleep deprived, sometimes you just need a sounding board, even though you know the answer in your regular life.
Sleep and I'm sure we'll have an episode about that in the future.
Oh yeah, let's do it. Yeah,
yeah.
How's your week been, Moran?
It's been good. Like I've just come off being on call for quite a few women. And so I'm coming off that kind of high as well as being kind of a little bit emotionally exhausted from kind of supporting for such a long time. But the kids are going on school holidays soon, which is great. I actually love school holidays because I don't like getting up in the morning and having to rush. So for me, they're a blessing. But yeah, it'll be nice to just kind of like have the girls home, not having to do too much. I've got a few kind of clients here and there, but I'm not kind of scheduling myself out where I don't have time for them. And so it's a good work-life balance, I feel.
Oh, fantastic. And so this break that you do you do a couple of those a year?
Not necessarily. Like I do like to take out my birthday month in October. But the last few years I've had a lot of repeater mums book in October. And like, I'm just one of those people who just cannot say no when it comes to repeaters.
When you've got that rapport with them, actually, I've got one that I've got a message back. She just messaged me a couple of days ago and said, I'm pregnant again. Let's do it again. And it's just so special. Like, how can you say no to that when you're part of their, you know, that part of their lives and so beautiful.
Exactly. So like, I'm just like, I can't say no. Yeah. So I'm hoping that I won't be on a birth on my birthday, which has happened before, but it is what it is and it's part of the job. And yeah, but I try to kind of get at least 1 or 2 months where I'm not doing anything. I kind of
booked a little bit of time this time of year just because we have April is going to be my daughter's 20th, and I've also got my mum coming from overseas. So it's a lot of things kind of happening at the same time. So I'm like, okay, it's perfect to not take any clients for that time. So it worked out great.
Absolutely. And just like in motherhood, you need to take that break and have that time for yourself. It's the same in this work, isn't it? And if you are doing consistent months of birth after birth after birth, being on call, you do burn out pretty quickly. And so it is really important to take those breaks so you can be the best support person in there.
1,000%. 1,000%. Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah. So Sammy, I thought today for our first episode, we'd let the audience kind of get to know us and who we are and our personalities and kind of just really know what they're kind of listening to. So I thought we'd just explore, because our whole kind of ethos in this podcast will be about mostly women and women empowerment and how we got into what we do. And obviously we're all doulas. And so how did you get into this work, Sammy?
It was a strange career path for me to take, I think, as someone who didn't really have babies on their radar until I did fall pregnant, accidentally pregnant. And so I just want to take the moment to give a big cuddle to anyone whose path wasn't as easy as that, and send you a lot of love. And because I know that can be really hard to hear. But yeah, I was working as a music teacher. I was head of instrumental music at a school, and I was really loving doing that work. And I thought that's what I'd do for the rest of my life. I thought I'd just sit in a classroom, play guitar with kids for the rest of my life. And when we did fall pregnant, I was thinking about this today, like how the fuck did I end up here? One of my friends was pregnant at the same time as me, and she said, have you heard of hypnobirthing? And I was ready to book in an elective cesarean because I was so scared of birth, which because of our societal conversations around it, the movies I'd seen, I had this innate fear, even though my mum had had a beautiful birth with me and she'd always talked about it so positively, that was not the story in my mind. So my friend said, have you heard of hypnobirthing? And my husband and I used to go and do meditation classes once a week, and we were really dedicated to mindfulness. And I thought this so aligns with me. And through doing that hypnobirthing course, I found out about the physiology of birth, and I got really excited for my birth. My birth was a dumpster fire. It was a real shit show. It ended up in an emergency cesarean, and I had a postpartum from hell following on from that.
And so how did you kind of go?
Dumpster fire. Yep.
No, we're not going to skip over. But before you go on, you said that your mom had really good birth story with you.
Yeah.
So why do you think that you came to the kind of conclusion of like oh, this, I would just would go in for a cesarean. Like, why do you think that was what was crossing your mindset with that?
I just had this innate fear of it. Which is so funny because now, and you know, I did end up having a VBAC and it was unmedicated, and it was the best day of my life. I don't know. I think it was just like, and you know, again with my mum, she was quite positive about when I had my menarche, my first period, but the stories from my peers were, this is such a shameful thing, and that carries on into our birth space. And I think it was just this shame and fear of my body.
It's interesting because I've been delving more into kind of Jane Hardwick Collins about, your lineage and kind of where you, like that, your stories. And so it was really surprising to, because you're probably the first person I've heard that their story has been profoundly good. And yet you still had that fear. So it must be that societal pressure.
100%. It was just the movies I'd seen. There was a show with Asha Keddy, and she was a obstetrician.
I used to love that show.
Was that Australian drama?
Was it Offspring?
Yeah, or? Offspring. And so I was kind of watching that in the years before I fell pregnant, and there was some traumatic shit in that show. And I was carrying those stories. I'm going to say it was from Offspring. And I love that show. I should have been watching For the Midwife. instead of this, because and I'd probably been watching One Born Every Minute, and there wasn't this lift on ban of birth on Instagram, so I wasn't looking at birthing videos at all. I remember even as a child, my mum had, when she was preparing to birth my sister, she had natural birth videos that she used to get from the library and put in the VCR player. And I remember those videos in my mind of babies coming out of vulvas and vaginas. Yeah, so it was just the peer influence, I believe, and what I was consuming. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that obviously had a huge influence on you to that point.
Oh, definitely. But it was a blessing. I went to this very old GP that I had nothing to do with, who confirmed my pregnancy for me. And I was living in a catchment for MGP. And so he just went, "You're in this." And I was like, "What the hell is this? Can I have a cesarean in that? Are they going to make me have a natural birth?" And so it was a real blessing, because I had two beautiful midwives in there, and they were really with woman. They were. And I can see now, I know so much about it. I could see what they were doing. There was obstetric violence that happened in that birth, and which I'm sure we'll delve into in later episodes. And that really bled into my postpartum.
Okay.
So I had, at the time of being pregnant, three students that were also pregnant. And we were all around the same gestation. We were birthing within a month of each other. And two were 14, one was 18. And in the months after our birth, we'd all reconnected at the school. And the 14-year-olds, they did really well. They didn't have epidurals. They smashed it. The 18-year-old, and they had family support. The 18-year-old, all these girls are refugees. And she had aged out of residential care. She didn't come to Australia with any family, and she was living in an apartment by herself. And she said she labored there for 3 days, she told me. Then she caught the train into the hospital on her own, and then had her baby, and then got back on the train and went back to an empty apartment. And so I just thought, like, English is her fourth or fifth language. Like, I had had such a terrible time, and I had support. I have an amazing husband. I had my mum come visit me every day. I had a best friend who sat up with my colicky baby until 2 a.m. every night so my husband and I could sleep for the first 6 weeks, and then she would get up and go to work. So I had support beyond what most people have. I actually had a village around me, and it was a dumpster fire. It was horrible. It was like a black hole of hell. And that was following on from birth trauma and probably just not supporting myself properly with nutrition and all the things that I know now. And I just thought, for this girl, like, wow, like, our school failed you. The hospital system failed you. Our society failed you so badly. And I have all this support, and it was still so hard for me. And how were you sitting in an apartment on your own with a new baby? That's inhumane.
Yeah.
And so I thought, there's got to be a person that comes in postpartum for these people. And then, you know, I'm living in a, like, higher socioeconomic area, and, you know, English is my first language. It was still fucking hard. And so, who is this person? Who comes in? There is someone. This is their job. I know it. I know this has to be a job, or otherwise I'm going to make it a job. And this is just when the ban is being lifted on Instagram for birth videos, and in comes the doulas. And I was like, as soon as I saw it, I was like, that is it. I just had this feeling like, that is exactly what I want to do. And I had to do a lot of work in my doula training and, you know, with my psychologist to unpack my birth so that I didn't take that into anyone else's birth. And that's the big work of doulas, I think, is understanding this is not your birth. This is not your story. This is their story. And, you know, it's just your job to support them in that. So that's always my big work, is to unpack my own shit before I go into someone else's shit.
And how did you find that going into your first birth, like attending your first birth as a doula?
Yeah. So my first birth ended in an emergency cesarean. And I just thought, is this it? Is this what happens to everyone? We all have cesareans. Wow. And that was a very short induction with a tiny bit of mech, and then she's wheeled off into surgery. And I was like, wow, the hospital system. So I had actually gone into this doula work coming from a background of education, thinking, okay, we can work together. The midwives can work together. The obstetricians can work together. We can make a really positive birth space. And I was very quickly disheartened by that. And I was like, oh, okay, this is not how it works. These women are numbers and you are a room number.
And you got a rude awakening in your first attendance at a first birth.
Big time.
Did you debrief that with anybody? Were you able to kind of, because obviously you being a VBAC going into your first birth and then ending up being a cesarean, that must have been really not only just like a rude awakening to like, okay, this is happening to not just me, it's happening to a lot of women, but also it's like, are you feeling a bit conflicted with being a doula in this space? What can I do
to kind of help women? It lit the fire even more. And I was like, I could see the injustice. So my education background was in social justice and working with these refugee and asylum seekers and, you know, fighting for their rights. And I was out like at rallies every weekend and fundraisers. And I was really doing the social justice work there in that space. And I was like, okay, no, actually even affluent women need this. This is a social justice human rights issue going on right now.
So a doula was born, Sammy.
Here I am, 6 years later. A doula is born.
A doula is born. I've always, like, my partner has been really supportive when I initially became a doula, and he's been really great. But sometimes when that phone dings at night, he wants to throw that phone against the wall and go like, "Will it fucking shut up?" So has your partner in terms of support?
Yeah, he is wonderful. I think because I set my prices at a point where it is contributing financially to the family, he understands there's that really good support there of like, yeah, you got to go. Like, so we're seeing the financial, you know, we're paying off the mortgage with my wage from this, and so there's that level of it as well. And also he's just my biggest cheerleader. He is like, if I book a new client, I tell him, and he's just like, yeah, that's awesome. Like starting this podcast, he was like, that's so awesome. Like you have to have that support, right?
Yeah.
But we've done a lot of work as a team and done, you know, the marriage counseling, and we have watered our garden so well to be each other's cheerleaders. And I think that I'd love to do an episode on the mental load of parenting and how that changes, because I think I got lucky in our society that I married a man who just did the washing when it was there. You know, my mental load isn't like, hey, do you mind doing the vacuuming? He's just got the vacuum. On a Saturday morning, I'm like, where's Micah? He's upstairs cleaning the shower. Like, he understands the division of the mental load. So, and he's very supportive of the doula work as well.
And I'm singing his praises.
He's a really good support. And you can't do this work without your good support networks.
How much money did he give you to say that on the first podcast?
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, it wasn't money.
That's why our podcast is R-rated. So with doula support, like I feel like it was just a calling for me, but I feel like, you know, the more... Because for me, I only started after I had my third, but you went and you already had kind of planted the seed after you had your first, right? And then you already kind of went into becoming a doula, and then you had your VBAC.
Yes.
Correct. So how was that, having the VBAC, having that experience, and then going back into doula work with kind of going, fuck yeah, I've got there. Like I did it. You know what I mean? How did that feel?
I don't know if it really affected the way that I practiced. I feel like for some reason, or the universe gives you what you call in, even from the beginning of my doula work, I had started to take probably about 50% feedback. And also, I guess it is, women who have had a primary cesarean understand that they might need extra support when birthing the second time. They may have been really hard done by in their first births, which is a lot of the women that I work with. And so I was getting this high percentage of women planning a VBAC, and I was seeing these amazing VBACs at home, in the hospital. Women were smashing it, or even women who didn't have a VBAC had a repeat cesarean, but were then informed in every decision. And they look back on that like it was their greatest achievement, and they feel so good about it. Even if they got to pushing and then it ended up in a cesarean, those women were like, that was amazing. I got to push. Yeah. I felt that. Like, and so I was seeing these beautiful, and that I was like, oh, and every person I took on who was planning a VBAC, I had this deep belief that they could do it even before I had done it. And so then when I was planning my VBAC, I was like, why can't you believe in yourself like this? Yeah. I believe those women could do it. I've seen it done. I've seen it done at home with no intervention, with no care provider. I've seen a woman have her baby in her toilet without anyone there, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And you also birthed in the time of COVID, which brought another kind of complexity to the whole thing. So
absolutely. Yes. I birthed with a private midwife who I just absolutely loved. And she, as my husband said, she was just the right amount of Wild West midwife that I needed and clinical that he needed, because he'd done part of his nursing degree and he did have that clinical side. And so he and I both loved her. And I had Kirby as my doula, and she, yay, I just can't sing her praises high enough either. She is amazing. And, you know, yeah, you're right. Like, we were in a lockdown the week that I had my baby, and I had to I had a discussion with my midwife because I was going to birth in hospital if I was going to have a baby in hospital. I had that option, or I was mentally planning for a free birth. Actually, like, my intention was to birth on my own in my cupboard without anyone. Didn't work out like that. But I said, if we're going into hospital, I'm taking Kirby. I'm not taking Micah. And we'd had that discussion, and, you know.
And how did he feel about that when you said that?
I think I don't know. Maren, I didn't even ask him. I'm sure he was fine. You know, when you've got another baby as well, and, you know, if he was going to stay home with the toddler, it's not like this, you know.
Yeah.
There's other things for him to do. But for me, birth is women's business, and I don't want to get cancelled straight away, but it is. Like, I just feel like it's women's business. I wanted to be surrounded by feminine energy. I wanted a doula and a private midwife that I knew so intimately. They knew me. They knew my plans. That's who I needed.
Yeah. I said the same thing to my husband when COVID was going on, and I was supporting a lot of women through COVID. Like, the amount of women who were contacting me for support, it was just beyond, because they were just, they didn't know what they were facing at the hospital at the time, and it was just really scary. And so I said to my husband, if I was pregnant during COVID, there is no freaking way you would be coming in with me. I would be taking my doula in with me. Like, I just don't feel that would have been even a discussion that we would have had, because I knew what I needed and I knew that I needed her. And so, yeah.
Yeah. And the amount of birth trauma that's come out of that time is out of control, really is. And we put so much pressure on these male partners to be everything, to be every matriarchal figure for us. And that's the impossible task, when they also have to understand hospital policy. Unless they're working in there, they have no idea to say, get rid of your people pleasing.
Yeah, even if they are working there, I think that maternity care in itself has a way, and especially when it's your baby, they just use things, the language that they use, the terminology that they're using, the fear mongering that's going on, it's insane. And I don't think that we still know the full extent of the birth trauma that has come out from COVID. Like, I really don't think that we've even touched on it. I think that there's so much more that it has influenced women's life in such a profound way that I don't think we've even touched the corner of what that has meant for women that have had babies through COVID. Like, really.
Definitely not. That will come out in the years to come when women are ready to unpack it. But once, you know, you head into motherhood and you're in survival mode from there, it can take years for that to bubble up again until you can face it.
100%. Yeah. So, Sammy,
yes,
I want to know something about you that nobody else knows.
Oh.
Or even if you'd like to share an embarrassing story, Sammy. I would love anything that you're open to sharing.
Nothing embarrassing has ever happened to me, Miranda.
Oh, bullshit. Sammy, bullshit.
I am literally the most awkward person on this planet. Everything, like every situation is bad for me. The fact that I'm holding a conversation now is a miracle. I remember once this is my level of awkwardness. I was working in a shoe shop and the lady bought the pair of shoes and she finished the sale. And I said, bye, I love you. And
oh, no.
instead of saying, oh, sorry, I didn't mean to say it, I just looked at my shoes. I literally just looked down. I was probably very hungover. It was when I was in my early 20s. But that is my level of social, like, I walk away from some conversations just like, what the fuck did you just say? Honestly.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Did she look at you and go, like, what the fuck?
Yeah, she just, I don't know, actually, but she wasn't there when I looked up.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
Wait, let's do yours. Let's do it right now. What's your embarrassing story?
I think I've told you this story before, Sammy, but I'm going to tell it. I'm going to retell it for our audience so they get the full effect of how embarrassing this was for me. When COVID just initially started and, like, you know, they were kind of initially starting to do like the lockdowns and canceling flights and everything like that. So I actually, prior to this, got accepted for my abstract for the doula conference. And I was so excited. And so I was getting ready with everything for the slides for the conference and everything like that. And then last minute, they canceled it and they made it a Zoom conference. And I was like, okay. Like, I can work with that, like, you know, get on my computer, just log on to Zoom. And at the time, like, this was very new. Zoom was something that was just, like, very fresh for everyone. Like, you didn't know how it worked or anything like that.
I remember.
So, yes, they had some really great speakers at that conference. And one of the speakers was Rachel Reed. And some of you may know Rachel Reed as she's got a blog called Midwife Thinking, and she is just in the birthy world. She's like a superstar, basically.
She's got the Midwife's Cauldron too. Fantastic podcast.
Amazing podcast. So I'm a huge fan of hers and I've been following her work, and she was one of the speakers at this conference. And so they just gave me, the doula conference just sent me an email saying when I log on and everything like that. And I was like super nervous that day. Like, you know what I mean? It's the first time I'm doing anything like this. And so when it was my time to log on, like 5 minutes before, like, you know, I was all set up, but 5 minutes before I logged on and I opened my computer, I log on to Zoom. And the first thing I see is Rachel Reed presenting right before me. And I said something like, holy fuck, they put me after Rachel Reed. And suddenly I see Rachel like looking, where is that noise coming from? And I'm like, holy shit, she can hear me. So I literally closed my laptop and threw it across the room because I was just so mortified. because I was not muted. I do not know what they were thinking not to mute people as they're going on to the conference. It was horrific. It was just horrific. And so I was so traumatized. I don't know, Sammy, how I logged back on and did my presentation after that, because I was literally shitting my pants. Not only did everyone hear me, but Rachel Reed heard me, which was like most important for me that she heard me. And it was so embarrassing. It was just so embarrassing.
Gosh, so. I can't. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Well, you know, like the birth world is not that big, right? And so we were recently at a, the Born From Home film premiere, which is done by two beautiful ladies out of Brisbane, and it's just gorgeous. It's just highly recommend. But I was standing in a circle with people, and Dr. Sarah Buckley, who wrote Gentle Birth, Gentle Mothering, like highly influential, she came over to me and she directly looked at me and she said, "Hi, how are you going?" Like she knew me, because I think she thought I was Amanda, who was one of the filmmakers. And I did the same thing, Maren. I just looked at my shoes.
No, you didn't.
I didn't even say hello. I was just looked at my shoe. I was like, I couldn't. My brain shut down. So,
oh my God, that's so funny.
I don't know why I am the way I am.
I love you. I love you, Sammy. You know, Sammy, I was reflecting today and I said, when did I first kind of meet Sammy and know of Sammy? Sammy left me these beautiful cookies outside on my front veranda. They were the shape of a uterus and baby.
Yeah.
And they were just so beautiful that I just didn't want to eat them. That's how gorgeous they were.
I found this cookie maker who was on maternity leave from being a midwife. And I was like, oh, hey, I want to do some custom made cookies for a couple of birth workers. What do you reckon? She was like, let's do it. I'm going to get uteruses. And she's like, do you think they're going to mind eating little fetuses? And I was like, it'll be fine. Chuck it on there. But it did look good.
It'll be fine. I ate the fetus and I ate the uterus and I loved
it. Yeah, they're really nice, aren't they? They were good cookies.
They were really good cookies. So yeah.
I was thinking about, I'm going to change conversation a little bit, but I was thinking about when I first met you or knew of you. And it was when I was a real baby doula and I was on my way to a prenatal meeting and I just looked up Spotify doula podcast doula, and there was an interview that you had done on someone's podcast. I can't remember, it was years ago now, and I listened to that on the way to this prenatal and it really hyped me up. It was all about what it is to be a doula, and I was like, yeah. And so then I looked on your Instagram and I saw that you had a huge following, and I just messaged you and I just said, hey, I just listened to this podcast. I just thought you were amazing. And you wrote back and you were so kind. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's so nice.
That's so sweet.
Yeah.
I love it.
You spoke
I love
very
it.
Well. Yeah.
All right. Good. That's good. Because I don't remember what I say on those things. That's good.
I mean, it was years ago, literally when podcasting was still a baby itself back then. Okay. Yeah.
Well, we've been doing this for quite a while. So
you have. Tell me, Maren, when did you start this and how'd you get into it?
Yeah. So I am coming up to my 12th year of being a doula. So, and for me, this was never on my radar. Like I was wouldn't even think of this. This is just something that I would do in my life. And so like I kind of got pregnant very young. I had my first when I was 24. And for me, when I got pregnant, I just assumed that, you know, like any other mainstream mama, I went to my GP, confirmed the pregnancy. I had private health insurance. He said to me, pick someone on the list. I was brought up with the mentality, because I come from a very Jewish family, to like pick the Jewish doctor. And so I picked the Jewish name from the list and I was like, you know, it'll be fine. And so.
Was this in Brisbane?
This was in Sydney. So Sydney. In Sydney. I had my first in Sydney. And unbeknownst to me, he was a complete schmuck. So he was just one of those doctors that you go in, you wait for an hour, you see him for 5 minutes kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Classic.
And a complete classic. And one thing that really stands out for me with him, it was he gave me this little like clip notes sort of thing. It was like this little post-it note sort of thing that had my weight Every week he would mark my weight and he would weigh me. And then he would put a sticker on if I didn't gain too much weight. And so I was just like, oh, I need to impress the doctor that I'm not gaining too much weight.
Oh, okay. Well,
yeah.
Whoa.
It was, yeah. Yeah. So then thankfully I had a very low risk pregnancy. No issues. I didn't really feel too nauseous or anything like that. Obviously the first trimester I was feeling a bit tired and stuff, but overall my pregnancies were good. And then it came to giving birth. I was booked in with him for an induction at exactly 40 weeks. And I actually went to spontaneous labor just a couple of days before.
Thank God, but went into labor
and I had a panic attack. It freaked the bejesus out of me. And I had a lot of kind of childhood trauma stuff that was coming up for me then that I really didn't even look through or heal through or deal with or anything like that. And that was just like, no, I just cannot be a mother, cannot be a mother, cannot be a mother. And so that panic just kept rising and rising in me. And so because of that, and because of the way I think the medical system took advantage of that and me not progressing, and I wasn't really supported well through that, I got everything under the sun other than a cesarean. And so when you talk about obstetric violence and things like that, and, you know, I actually didn't know till I became a doula that I had an episiotomy.
Wow.
Never got asked, never gained consent. He never gained consent or anything. The only reason I actually discovered that when I became a doula is because when I did my training and then I started attending births, I knew that when you have a forceps delivery, you need to do an episiotomy to actually get the equipment in there, kind of thing, to get the forceps into you. And so I went to my husband and I said to him, tell me, did I ever have an episiotomy when he used forceps? And he was like, yeah, he cut you. And I was like, no one said a thing. Not my husband, not my sister. The doctor definitely didn't ask me if he could do it. Aww. And so that was a real big shock for me. And so I kind of went away from that birth, not just with the trauma that I had that was creeping up from childhood, but then I had the trauma from the birth of like, holy fuck, what just happened? I literally felt like I had this birth, had this baby passed on to me, and I felt numb. Like I just didn't feel connected. I just felt like, why are they giving her to me? Like what's happening here? Like what do they want me to do with her now? Kind of thing. It just felt really a disconnect. And it took a while because I loved her to death and she was just like my best friend. But it took a while for me to like bond with her because of that. And sometimes I used to feel really guilty, but sometimes I used to think if I didn't have this birth with you, I wouldn't have postnatal depression. I wouldn't have postnatal anxiety. And that's what I had for the following probably year to year and a half after I had her. It was just like, I felt like it was just a dark, dark hole that I couldn't get myself out of. And so that's kind of like, I decided we're not having any more babies and that was it. I'm done with having babies. And I told my husband that this is the first and last biological child you're having from me. It's not happening again. And so then we moved from Sydney to the Gold Coast. And like you said, societal, who you kind of hang around with, the messages that you hear, you know, the conversations you have, the kind of, I had like eye-opening moments with women that I was kind of surrounding myself with. It kind of showed me a different way of not anything even to do with birth, but a different way of like, these are like-minded women who are not just seeing one way of doing things. And so from some reason, I had to meet this particular person when I moved. She became a really good friend of mine. A friend of hers used a doula, hired a doula at her birth. And so she said to me, why don't you think about that if you want to have more children? And so when we got pregnant, I had a loss with that pregnancy. And I thought it was like the universe message saying, nah, you're not ready. Don't have babies. Like, this is not happening. But I felt like I was at a point in my life that my mindset was becoming really, really stronger. So I was like, no, I really want to have a bigger family. And so I hired that doula when we got pregnant with my second. And it was just like, I remember she showed me the Ricky Lake film, The Business of Being Born.
Great film.
Oh my God. It literally, in every sense of the word, changed my life. Like, it was just, I watched that film, and if I could have sent it to every person that I knew, I probably would. Like, it was just life-changing. And so she used to show me videos of these Russian women birthing in the sea. And like, I was just like, holy shit, women are doing it like everywhere. Like, you know, like, this is so possible. And so what happened eventually with her birth is that I eventually, in the last minute, decided to stay at home. And I had a free birth with just my doula and my husband. Just had her in my bathtub at home, and it was just
so beautiful,
incredible. So like, my husband, he was just so proud. He was just like, I can't even explain. It just completely changed the way he viewed me. It changed the way he viewed us as a family. It changed my whole perspective of myself, and changed how my mindset, especially. Like, I felt like in that first birth as though I was very weak. And not that I couldn't do it without pain relief. It was more of weakness of the mind. I felt like I wasn't getting what I needed to stand strong in motherhood. It wasn't about me not getting all these drugs and not doing it pain-free. It was just more about me not standing up for myself and not having a voice. And so in that second birth, when I decided not staying home, I felt like I came into my power. It was just completely life-changing. And so when I had my third, again, I just totally rocked that birth, even though she was posterior. But I totally did it. And I was just so super proud of myself. And then I was like, nah, I have to get into birth work. Like, I just have to get into it. And so when she was one, like, I did the study like during her first year of life. And then when she was one, I attended my first birth.
And what was that birth like?
Holy shit. So that birth was, because I initially started to be a doula in Perth, in WA. And in WA, they've got a really good home birth midwifery program. So it's government funded. And a lot of, when I started out initially as a doula, a lot of the births I were attending were home birth because of that. Because here in Queensland, they have to pay for a midwife and they have to pay for a doula. So a lot of the time you don't get as many home births because of that reason, because it's just a really expensive way to do it. And so in Perth, because you didn't have to pay, a lot of women would be hiring a doula. And so the first birth I ever had was a home birth. It was a first time mom. And the midwife was absolutely beautiful, very experienced midwife. I'm still in touch with that midwife till today because I just learned so much from attending births with her. But in that birth, as the baby was coming out, the cord snapped. And that doesn't happen very often.
I've never seen that.
Yeah. So the cord snapped. The cord was, it wasn't like it was a short cord or whatever, but it just snapped. And the midwife, within like a matter of a second or two, basically just clamped both sides of that cord. But by the end of that birth, the house looked like a Quentin Tarantino movie. And I was like, I was basically like cleaning the floor with towels and going, holy shit.
It's messy. Birth is messy.
Yes. Yes. So that was a lot. So that was like, but it was an amazing birth. Like, the woman was like, she was in heaven. Like, she was just, she felt so empowered afterwards. This was her first baby. And she was just so well supported by the midwife as well. And she was so gracious in letting like this student doula come into her birth and really kind of just practice at that stage. I was more kind of like just practicing what I've been learning. And it was great. And then I was an addict. So I became an addict for birth. And I just kept on attending and attending and attending birth. So like, it just took over me. And I was just like wanting to learn. I did a lot of private hospital births at that stage. And I did a lot of births where I felt like I was a witness to obstetric violence. And so that had a huge effect on me. So I had to like debrief a lot. And I experienced all varieties of birth, from breech to twins. You know, I've had like a lot of women that have chosen to go last minute into a hospital they didn't want to initially, or women that chose to have pain relief, women that wanted to have a natural birth, cesareans, everything. So I was just like immersing myself in so much. And I feel like it's even today, like I've attended hundreds of births, and today I walk into a birth and I still learn something new.
Every birth is different. I feel the same. Yep.
Yeah, 100%.
So Maren, what's your favorite part about it? What do you love about this work?
I think my favorite part about it would have to be the moments when women realize they've got more power than they think they did. You know what I mean? I feel like a lot of women are still having that question, that umbrella question of, am I allowed? And when they discover that this is your body, this is your baby, this is your choice, and they come into their power, I just love witnessing that. Like for me, that is just like the highlight of it all. And that what keeps me addicted to it. And I've just met so many beautiful women and families through this work. Like a lot of my clients have become my friends. And we're just on the same wavelength with the way we think and what we do and stuff like that. And yeah, it's just been great. I just love it. It's hard. It's hard work, though. It's hard being on call.
Tell me, what's the worst part then? Let's flip it. What's the hardest part for you?
The on call definitely is the hardest part. And sometimes you really want a type of birth for someone who really wants it for themselves, and then it doesn't eventuate that way. And because you're so emotionally involved, it's not just like any other work where you can just go home and like, oh well, she didn't get that, what she wanted. It stays with you. It really stays with you. And I find like, I still go home and kind of go, oh, but what if we did this or that? Or do you think if I did that? Or, and it's just like, I just completely go through it in my head and just think of any scenario. And I just have to kind of put myself straight and kind of go, no, this is not your journey, and just you did what you could do.
But I think the day that you stop doing that is the day that you walk out of this work, because that's just showing how much you love it and how involved you are in that professional manner with your clients, and you're invested in them, and it's beautiful.
Yeah. 100%. So yeah, I wouldn't do anything else, to be honest. Like I can't think of what I would do. Like, what would you do, Sammy, if you weren't doing doula work?
I have no idea. I don't think I could go back to teaching full time. I just don't think I can do it. The landscape of what that looks like for teachers right now is so different, and it's just not my vibe.
Yeah.
What would you do? You nothing. I can't see myself getting out of this work.
Yeah, me neither. Like, I think it'll have an expiry date in terms of attending births as much as I do at the moment, just because the recovery afterwards, like I am in my 40s, and the recovery afterwards, it takes longer. Like, I can feel it. Like, it takes longer. Like, if I'm going to a birth that even I've been at for 12 to 15 hours, it just like, I feel jet lagged for a few days afterwards. I need like a good recovery time. Mm. Other than that, but I used to, before I started birth work, I actually used to work for Australia Post, and I used to be in their customer service complaint center. And I used to get like, most of the complaints were about, you know, posties stealing pornography.
Fair. You got to get through the day somehow.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, I definitely would not go back to that. Yeah, definitely not go back to that. I don't know what I would do, to be honest. Yeah.
And just, you know, that investment that you put into your clients, like I was at a birth recently and we had days and days of labor, and then she had her VBAC and I just sobbed. I messaged you and I was like, I'm not right in the head. Like, I have literally sobbed in this birth room. And the midwife also was shedding a tear. Like, it was an MGP and we'd been there for so long, and you're just so invested in these people. You want the outcome for them that they work so hard for. And so holding that boundary is hard sometimes.
It is. And that's it's really hard. It's to hold that boundary and kind of go, at the end of the day, you know, I'm giving her support in the manner that I need to, like, put a little bit of boundary, because this is not my journey. You know what I mean? And there has to be some kind of line that you can't cross with that, or else it's going to affect you like really badly. And I experienced that in my early days, especially.
I think that's where birth debriefing is so important, because once I've debriefed it and I try and do it within the first 24, 48 hours, I can let a lot of it go and that's done, and I can compartmentalize that experience. You talk to people who haven't debriefed their birth, even personally or one that they've witnessed, and they'll just go blah, 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 and they'll say it in a really inappropriate setting. And I'm talking about a birth to people who are maybe not birth workers, or this is not the appropriate setting, I just go, oh, I can see it in myself. Hang on, I need to debrief that. Stop talking now.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you speak to your partner about your births at all, or not really?
I do. Yeah, I do. But I really love to debrief with, there's one birth photographer in Brisbane, and I was actually her doula her postpartum doula years ago. And so I always send her a message going, hey, you got a second? Let's debrief this. And she does the same with me. It's nice. You've got to have your debrief buddy, hey?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it keeps you grounded.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to have a lot of guests on this season, some that I'm very excited about. And I think we should workshop a question that we ask each of them at the beginning of the interview. And I'm just going to ask you this question and see what your answer is, Maran.
Okay.
But if you had to choose a book or movie or TV show that's had a significant impact on your life, what would it be?
Okay. I'm running through movies and books in my head. Okay. So, one book that really pops into my head is a book called Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway by Susan Jeffers.
Beautiful.
I feel like, especially when I was deeply heavily in postpartum with my first baby Bella, that book was just like my Bible sort of thing. You know what I mean? That was just something that really put my life into perspective and really kept me very grounded and centered with what I wanted. And because a lot of my kind of postpartum stuff was presenting as postpartum anxiety, which then, because I was in an anxious state for such a long time, then kind of delved into postpartum depression. So I don't think it was really postpartum depression initially, but it kind of went into that because I just felt so frustrated and hopeless with myself for feeling this way. And I feel like that book was just, it was just gave you the tools to know what to do with this monkey chatter that was going on through your mind and really put it into practical things that I could do. And that was just like, even until today, I just go back to that book sometimes and just kind of go, okay, where's my life at? Is it in balance? And what can I do about this or that? And it's such an amazing book. Have you read it, Sammy?
I have not read it, but let's put it in the show notes and I'm going to read it. Yep. I'm almost finished the book I'm reading now. Need another one.
Okay. What about you, Sammy? What's your movie or book?
You know what? I'm going to stick with a birth theme. I'm going to go with Birth with Confidence by Rhea Dempsey. And I know all the birth workers know it, all the midwives know it. Everyone should be giving it to everyone who's having a baby. But that book for me really shone a light of the crisis of confidence. That's the term that Rhea had coined. And that honestly got me through the VBAC. I was able to know exactly what my crisis of confidence was. And, you know, there's 2 centimeters, 5 centimeters, blah, blah, blah. I was doing my own internal examinations and going, this is my 2 centimeter crisis of confidence. I was totally dueling myself. It was terrible. But that book, I give it to women to read, and a lot of them don't voice that they're having a crisis of confidence. But in the sometimes in the moments post-birth or in the weeks when we debrief, they go, I knew it. I felt it and I pushed through it. And it really gets them through a lot of the just that moment where your hormones are trying to catch up with each other and you're trying to level up. And if you know that vital piece of information, it can really get you through a lot. And I just love that Rhea had a birth that didn't go her way, but she didn't blame herself. She was like, what the hell is wrong with this system that I just birthed in? And I feel like that's a really unusual way for women to think. We blame ourselves for everything. And the fact that she thought like that, and then that started this cascade, which ended in this book and her research, is such a beautiful contribution to this world. I really love that book.
Mm. I think every, especially first-time mom, needs to have that book. Like the thing that stood out for me in that book was, cause when she initially, released that book, she did a lot of workshops around Australia, and I went to one of her workshops and she was kind of, mentioning a few things in the book to kind of, to see how it works in real life sort of thing. Like, and she did this example of the circle of support.
Oh yeah. I love it.
And when you have a crisis of confidence, thinking that you can't save yourself. So who's your circle of support to be there when you look around the room and you scour the room for that weakest link? And usually it'll be your partner. Okay. And if you're looking at your partner and your partner is showing no confidence in you, because not because he doesn't believe you can do it, because he feels pity for you or he feels sorry for you. He doesn't want to see you go through this.
He's overwhelmed.
And he's overwhelmed because of that. When you're looking at him and he shows that no confidence, you're kind of not going to be able to lift yourself up all by yourself because you're in such a vulnerable state. So then who else do you look for in the room? The next one would be the midwife, but the midwife's working for the institution. She's not going to save you. You know what I mean? They're limited. They can't save you. There's so much they can do within that space. So then looking at like, who am I bringing into my birth space? Why have I chosen them? What is their birth stories that they're bringing into this birth space? How will they advocate for me? If they kind of falter in that way, then who is my next kind of person within that circle of support? Can I count on them? And so I found that is one of the most profound messages from that book, is because it got me thinking in a different way. And because of that, I support clients in a different way and teach them in a different way in that prenatal period where they kind of go, oh, what am I, who am I really inviting into that? Because sometimes it could be the mom or the mother-in-law, you know what I mean? And you just don't know that. Like I know for myself, my mom would be the last person I would invite into my birth. You know what I mean? Because she is bringing her own shit into my birth that has nothing to do with me. You know what I mean? And because of that, she will hinder my progress because I'm trying to protect her from not getting hurt and seeing her daughter in pain. And then I'll be stopping myself from going into labor.
Even if your mom was a midwife or a doula herself, she is still your mom first. And I've had to have a couple of frank conversations with people who are going to have or want to have their mothers in the room. And the mom comes to a prenatal and just talks about their own birth trauma for the whole hour. And having a conversation with that client going, there's a lot to unpack there. And if really, if that work isn't done before the birth, that's going to come into the birth room.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's a hard conversation to have with a client who really wants their mum in there, but that person can derail the whole thing.
Yeah. 100%. Yeah. Well, I think we did a good job for our first podcast, Sammy.
Let's pray to the tech gods that I don't, one of us doesn't sound like Darth Vader or both of us at the end of this record. And then after this, we're going to roll on with a couple of guests for the rest of the season. I can't wait for that.
Yeah, I look forward to that. Thank you guys for listening and we look forward to next time.
See you next time.
See you next time. Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to Doulas Uncensored today. If you like what you heard, don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. For more info about Sammy, my wonderful co-host, visit her website at sammygriffinbirthsupport.com. And to discover more insights about me, your co-host, check out twolife.com.au. We're eager to dive deeper into exciting topics in our future episodes. Stay connected, and until next time, wishing you all the best on your journey. Thanks for tuning in to Doulas Uncensored today. If you like what you heard, don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. For more info about Sammy, my wonderful co-host, visit her website at sammygriffinbirthsupport.com. And to discover more insights about me, your co-host, check out twolife.com.au. We're eager to dive deeper into exciting topics in our future episodes. Stay connected, and until next time, wishing you all the best on your journey.